time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. We are back. Happy New Year. Ali is away, so it's just, well, it's not just me today. You know, today we have a, you know, we got a guest co-host in the building, so we're going to have a good episode. As a matter of fact, let me go ahead and introduce our guest co-host this week. He is no stranger to co-hosting. He's a co-host of Comedy Outliers.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, OG.
That's a throwback.
The Medium Popcorn Podcast and yep. Drunk Black History, hailing from cold-ass Ann Arbor, Michigan. Comedian and screenwriter Brandon Collins, a.k.a. Frodo Blackens. Welcome to the conversation, brother. How you feeling?
I'm good, man. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me, bro.
Hold down. Happy New Year to you, man. Happy New Year. Is your New Year happy?
It's been pretty good, actually. You know, we start off the year pretty chill, you know what I mean? And it's just, you know, just relax and get a lot of sleep. Been watching a lot of movies and just now things are starting to ramp up, you know what I mean? So it was a good reset for the year. And also 2025 was trash, so it was good to start off like on calm energy, you know what I mean? Right. Even though we're going to war.
I was about to say it ain't nothing calm about what's going on. That shit
you
is,
know what though?
What's up?
You know what? Like have you adapted? Like have you what's your coping for that? You know what I mean? Because I'm the guy who does too much like a political news diving and like, all that shit. I pulled back on that this year. I'm like, I know too many people that don't even know, like some people in New York who didn't even know who was running for mayor. That's you know wild. What I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know what? If people don't care, like I'll be informed, but only about the shit I really care about that's immediately impacting me. Like obviously the big stuff of Venezuela stuff that could have a big, you know, impact on us. But for now, I'm just like, you know, just handling what I can. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to overload myself anymore.
I agree with you, dog. I cut back on the news and I'm fucking with Cutwaters. No, I'm not fucking with Cutwaters as much anymore, but I made it a point, this is at least a year ago, especially as we got into, you know, back into the Trump administration. He's a 24-hour president, I always say. You know, he'll tweet some shit 4 a.m. that is crazy. So I don't want to be provoked. You know, like I think it's almost like you gotta treat your energy like an equalizer. You know, like are you gonna let yourself be activated by this bullshit, or are you gonna just let me turn that down just a little bit? That's too much trouble for the morning. Let me not start my day like that. So
yeah, man, it reminds me of like back in. Did you ever do this when you were growing up, like watching music videos in the morning before you went to school?
Not in the morning, not really in the morning. No. I used to come back home and watch music videos.
Yeah. I got a bit about how like back in the day I used to like watch MTV and VH1 in the morning and they'd be like Britney Spears, DMX and Korn back to back. And it's just like that's some wild energy to start your morning with. That's how I feel with the news now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we got new puppies, you know, got a new puppy vet open, right? And then it's like, oh yeah, and then Trump's bombing Venezuela.
Right. Yeah, that is crazy. I like the wholesome shit sometimes. I saw some wholesome news. I can't remember what I saw, but I was relishing it as I was watching. I was like, yo, this is a wholesome story. I'm really feeling it. I cannot remember what it was, but it was
you can't
like,
remember the good news.
Nah, I can't remember. It's so much bad news that you forget. You forget, but you know, we here. It's 2026, man.
Yeah.
Oh man, as I've gotten older, like my peers have hit me with a Happy New Year on New Year's Eve, like early in the evening. You know what I'm saying? Like they throw in the towel. They be like, Happy New Year.
Yeah, they're going to bed.
Yeah, they going to bed. It'd be like 5:30. You like, come on, nigga, this is bad.
Oh,
luck.
That's early. That's
super.
Crazy.
Yeah, they just like, listen, don't call my phone. You know what I mean? Happy New Year. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'm going to sleep. So that's what it is. Did you do anything to bring in the New Year? You said you watched movies.
I was at a friend's party in Staten Island, which was, you know,
Wow.
Staten Island. But the good people that had some good food, mm-hmm. Good drinks. And so, yeah, it was just chill, man. And then we were able to come back to Queens with another couple that lived in the area. Mm-hmm. So it worked out. We didn't have to take the ferry and all that stuff and the train back late at night. So that worked out. It was chill.
Yeah, I was about to say Staten Island. That's a commitment.
It's such a pain in the ass, bro.
Yeah, it is. It is. But, you know, I do like the little boat ride. I'm not going to lie. It's kind of fly. You know, it's cool.
It's nice. It's quick, too. It's surprisingly fast.
Yeah, and it's surprisingly intimate. You know, like, I don't know if you've been to that top deck. Yeah. That's the couples only. You know what I'm saying? Like, it get a little after dark on the ferry. If you ain't got nobody, you looking like a creep. Take your ass downstairs.
Not all the way to the basement, though, because that's a little...
That's a different
energy. You don't want to do that. Yeah. Not until you get to, you know, almost to the dock. You don't want to go down all the way to the bottom.
Right, yeah. That's wild. I don't think I've been to Staten Island in a few years, actually. I know I wasn't there in 2025, for sure. I don't know if I've been to Staten Island since before the pandemic. You know that.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. That's how I break up a lot of what I've done in recent life. Was it before the pandemic? Have I done this since before the pandemic? Yeah. Or, you know.
But I hear you, man.
Yeah, man. But glad to have you on the pod, man.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. So what's going on otherwise, man? What you been up to? Man,
I'm just getting ready for this Drunk Black History tour. If your listeners don't know what Drunk Black History is, it's a show, podcast where I have a guest on, usually a comedian, but lately it's been like scholars and other podcasters and stuff. Mm. And we discuss a Black historical figure or event that we just think hasn't gotten enough recognition. You know what I mean? So doing a tour, I did one last year, so I kind of know what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. But we're hitting up Philly, Boston, LA. I'm doing a bunch of shows in New York. We're doing Austin. Shout out to Rebecca, Creek in the Cave. You know what I mean? I don't know if you've been down there, but she's doing her thing down in Austin.
Yeah, and I was down there in June. Yeah, salute to Rebecca. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah, man. And it's crazy that she still has the wall. You know what I mean? Like, I know that's very New York comedy specific, but like, it's wild that she still has that.
The Mindy photos and all of that?
Yeah.
Has she added to it? I saw the wall. Has she added to it? Like with the
I was there. Austin you were there paint? After me because I was there in March.
I didn't notice.
I was there in March, so I didn't see any new photos, but there might be now.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're adding more dates too. You know, I'm talking to some people in Newark. I'm talking to, I got a spinoff show I'm doing April. You know, so it's going well, man. And it's like a great use of my skill set as a performer because I'm an educator. And a comedian. Like I literally started doing teaching and comedy at the same time in high school. Mm. So this is like a beautiful blend for me. And so the response from the audience has been incredible, both for the live show and the podcast. I just can't wait to go out and, you know, meet more people, get to share these stories. It's been, especially for the 100th anniversary of Black History Month. So I'm just so excited, bro.
Yeah, that's what's up. Yo, you know, until you said that, I didn't know that it was the 100th anniversary of Black History Month. To be clear, it's the 50th, because for first 50 years it was Black History Week, and then it went to Black History Month, but still, like, I didn't know we went back that far, and, you know.
Yeah, shout out to Carter G. Woodson, bro.
Absolutely, you know, for sure, shout out to that man, and then, you know, it's, not to harp on this whole administration thing, but I feel as though this is the 100th, and there's this thing of, had this been any other administration, I think there would have been some type of formal recognition. Like, we would be loud and proud about it. Quietly, I don't know if Katz is keeping it low because Trump would try to just kibosh the whole shit. You know what I mean? I don't like to celebrate Black History on the low ever. But I don't know if people really knew 100 years. Like, that's amazing. That's amazing, yo. So... yeah, salute to that. Let me ask you that. Well, a couple things.
Yeah.
You said, I didn't know you taught. I didn't know you were a teacher at all.
Yeah, man. I got my bachelor's and master's are both in education. I got my bachelor's in adolescent education with a concentration in English. I basically wanted to be an English teacher until my senior year in college. Okay. And then I realized I love teaching history more than English, but by that point it was too late. And then I got my master's in counseling.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what are you? Are you an English teacher? Are you a history teacher? Like, what are you?
None, man. It's wild because, you know, when I graduated my bachelor's, New York went in a hiring freeze. It was 2008, right? Mm. So the whole economy and everything was fucked up.
Recession.
And then so then I went straight for my master's. I applied for my master's, bro, after I watched season 4 of The Wire.
Mm.
I was drunk on wine, and I was like, I got to help these kids.
Oh,
and
so man.
I sent an application to be for school counseling. I got in immediately.
Damn.
And then when I graduated in 2011, my master's finally, another hiring freeze, and there was like very specific requirements in New York State for you to get the school counselor like licensed fully. And by that point, I started doing some private in-reach school counseling for another company. And then I got taken into the private sector. Like I got referred to a managerial role in the private sector. And I was like in the ed tech space for the past, like, you know, 12 years or so after that.
You said ed tech?
Yeah, yeah. So like kind of like, you know, first it was like Kaplan test prep. And then I started working at coding boot camps and running those. Yeah, it was like a whole weird journey I took before I got the full-time screenwriting and stuff.
Okay, bet. When you said, season 4 of The Wire?
That's yeah, what, yeah, you know, with the kids.
Of
the
course.
Season.
The
best season, bro.
Arguably, but I remember, and I can't remember my man's name, but I just remember that last scene where he's like, what about me? You going to help me?
Randy.
Yes. Yeah,
that's a heartbreaking scene, bro.
Man, that was sad.
You going to protect me, huh?
You going, yeah.
You got man. Me, huh?
Oh, yeah. Shit.
And then you see him in season 5 for a second at the foster home. Not the foster home. He was at a group home. And, you know, he's all hearted because Randy was like the most innocent. Mm. Like he was like the nicest one of the whole clique.
Yeah.
Well, Dookie was just tragic, man. He's, you know, because he's going to be Bubbles. That's like the tragedy of like so many of those kids. You saw who they were going to become.
Mm.
You know, like Michael was going to become Omar. Right. And then the one kid was actually destined to be in the game.
Naaman?
Who got out. Naaman, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the anomaly, right? He was the one that got out, which is wild.
Right.
I love that show. I was just talking to somebody about the season 3.
Uh-huh.
So someone's, you know, because Clay did, you know, Isaiah.
Oh, yeah.
When Lajiri just died. So everyone's posting these, you know, Clay Davis clips.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the scene when Stringer was trying to get him killed. And he's talking to Slim. Do you remember the scene when he's like, I need you to hit Clay Davis? And then Slim's like, Clay Davis? The Clay Davis? Downtown Clay Davis? This is some assassination shit. Like, that's one of my favorite scenes ever.
Yeah, man, that show is so classic.
It's good, man.
I know a lot of people do the rewatch. Like a lot of people rewatch it again and again.
Yeah,
and it's hard for me to rewatch an entire series, but I love the clips. Like when I see clips, I fuck with them. I watch the whole shit. I might watch an episode here and there, but like, yeah, it was. It was so, man, that was a moment, but yeah.
It was. But I actually buried the lead, though, with the teaching stuff. So my first teaching experience, bro, was for a not-for-profit in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I taught sex ed. Mind you, I'm a sophomore in high school.
Oh, wow.
I taught sex ed to middle school and high school students. So I was teaching sex ed to my peers.
Were you fucking?
No, I think I was purposely.
What the fuck is going on?
It was crazy, bro. It's such a crazy experience. Like when I think about it, I'm like, why they let me do that?
Yeah, that's wild. That was a budget cut. They definitely was like, yo, get that. Tell that young man in there. That's interesting. Wow.
Yeah, I got paid to skip school and teach classes on abstinence, STDs, and HIV and shit.
Uh huh.
Abstinence was wild.
Sex ed is always so funny and awkward. I just remember like just the wild fucking questions and bug out shit that used to happen in sex ed class, man. It was, we had our gym teacher taught sex ed. I just remember that shit. Yeah, it was hilarious. What did I want to ask you? So you said typically drunk black history. And then where is it going to be this year? Let the people know. And are we going?
Yeah. So we're kicking off February 1st in the Punchline Philly.
Okay.
Then we're going to be in Brooklyn on Friday, February 13th at the Bauhaus. Then we're going to be in LA at the Elysian on Saturday, February 21st. Then we're going to be at the Museum of Food and Drink as part of the Black Women and Comedy Laugh Fest. That's going to be on Thursday, February 26th. I believe. And then we're in Austin in the second week in March. I'm blanking on the specific date, but the Creek in the Cave. And then we have other dates coming up. So just, I always tell people, just follow us on Instagram at Official Drunk Black History.
Dope. Where is the Museum of Food and Drink? Where's that at?
That's in Brooklyn at the Time Out Market in downtown, in Brooklyn. So really? I think it's downtown Brooklyn. Yeah.
Okay. I know exactly.
Shows there, and they're always great. But it's just dope to be part of Joanna Briley's festival and be a part of that movement.
They've been rocking out. They're at least 10 years deep, right? I would imagine.
She's done it for a few years. I think like maybe 7 or 8, but it could be 10. Okay. You know, I got introduced to Joanna last year, and she's been a great, just like, you know, friend. We bounce ideas off each other. She's always recommending great people for the podcast. She's doing her thing, man. She works for MTA, which is hilarious because she has some great stories about that. I don't know if you've ever heard, like, you know, her stories about working for the MTA, but they're great.
Nah, I gotta hear them. That sounds like that could be funny. I don't know if it's too early. I don't know if you want to, you know, spoil anything. Well, I got two questions because I know you said you do comedians and you have scholars on there.
Yep.
Do you want to reveal anybody that you got on any of these stops, or do you want to talk about some scholars that you've had in the past?
No, I don't like to talk about the lineups too much, just because they do change sometimes. Sometimes, you know, scheduling. You know, and that's a lesson I learned from Comedy Outliers. You know, you mentioned that earlier, because, you know, we would sometimes book big names, and sometimes the plus side was the show at that point, like when big names started dropping out, like randomly or last minute, the show was so good that people were just going for the show. But occasionally there'd be like two or three people that would come specifically for one comic, right? Mm-hmm. And I always hated feeling like, we disappointed those people because so-and-so had to drop out. Yeah. So, you know, we mentioned the lineups like in like press releases and like online marketing and stuff like that. But I typically just want the brand to stand on its own. So people come out, just know you're going to have a good time. You're going to learn something, and you might get a little drunk.
Yeah, it is. Or a lot drunk. You know, it's definitely, if you're doing dry January, you might want to come back with a vengeance in February.
But we've had some great guests on. I got to get you on a show. Yeah. At some point, we've had J.D. Williams for The Wire. He played Bodie.
He was
in our last New York show.
Okay.
D. Woods from Danny Kane's been on. Bomani Jones, Dr. Andre M. Perry. We've had some great guests on the show. And, you know, I've been doing it myself for the past, like, 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And that's been, like, that's been a bit of a whirlwind. Because, as you know, like, you know, you mentioned me co-hosting and stuff. I usually do something with a partner. Mm-hmm. And so kind of taking this on myself has been incredibly daunting, but also incredibly rewarding, because, you know, it's allowed me to kind of like find my comedy voice, so to speak, which is wild because I've been in comedy since high school, but like now I finally feel like, oh, I know who Brandon Collins is on stage.
You know what I mean? Yeah, take a minute. And you ain't got to split that money with nobody.
It does take a minute, bro.
Yeah, for sure.
It does take a minute, man. Like, no one tells you that when you get into like creative shit, right? Like, you're like, I know my voice. And you never know that, like, it might evolve. It might not be, you know what I mean? It's a lot.
You know what? I think people told me, and I remember, shout out to my homie, Chloe Hilliard, because I remember telling her.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard her say she felt the way when I said it, but I'd heard people say it's going to take you at least 10 years to find your voice. You'd be like, man, get the fuck out of here. Even I felt like that. So, like, I think sometimes, I was just saying this last week, but sometimes you'll hear things from, you know, vets in the game that could sound discouraging, but when you really live it, you like, oh, okay, I see what this really meant, you know? And I also think if you go in that thinking that, it gives you a little, I don't want to say that, because I could say, because I think it depends on the person, because you could still be very impatient to be like, nah, fuck that. I'm a be me before whatever, 10 years in, I'm gonna be me year one. I'm a phenom. You know what I mean? But it definitely takes a while. Look, not even just find yourself, because that, you know, or be yourself or sound like yourself. I think it's just so much just to get comfortable, to trust your funny, all of that shit, you know. Go ahead.
Sorry.
No.
No, I was just gonna say, we also like, you know, because I don't know when you started comedy. Mm-hmm. Like particularly in New York and everything like that. But I feel like, you know, when we used to see each other a lot in the scene, we were around people that were blowing up so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, damn, should I be blowing up that fast? You know what I mean? Like, we were around when Che was like, you know, hosted Bar Matchless, mm-hmm. and then he's on The Daily Show, and then he's on SNL.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Within like a year and a half. You know what I mean? So it's like, and on seeing other people like that, I always felt like, damn, like, I'm not doing enough or whatever. Or like, I'm not, you know, I don't have the right voice to get me to where I want to be and stuff. And I just had to slow down, man. I just had to slow down, like, let, you know, things come naturally. And that's been one of the best things about the past like 2 years, doing the show on my own and really honing in on my voice, and not just in performing but also writing as well. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, nah. You have to quiet that, you know. You know, because it could kill. It'll have you feeling some type of way. You know what I mean?
100%.
And it listen, everybody's route is everybody's route. What have you noticed in the last, you said 2 years now that you've been doing this solo, like, how have you noticed your voice coming? What has changed? You know, like, what have you peeped within these last 2 years? What, like, what growth is something that you could be like, okay, I see this is different from, you know.
Yeah, I'm way more confident on stage in my ability to be witty and my ability to think on my feet. And I'm also a great fucking interviewer.
Okay.
That's what I really realized. Like, I think when I was co-hosting it with someone else, it was a little hard for me to actually focus in on like the importance of the educational elements of stuff, like in getting that out on the show. But I found a way where I can do that while also having like, you know, a comedic, you know, a comedy twist to the question, or allowing the guest to like make a joke or a funny observation, even if they're a scholar or, you know, a podcaster that doesn't really dabble in comedy. You know what I mean? Like, setting up people for success. Like, that's something that I've realized that I'm really good at.
What are you listening to currently? Just to switch it up a bit. What you listening to? Are you listening to anything currently? What's the last?
Talking about podcast, music?
Podcast, really music. I'm talking music, honestly, to be totally honest.
Okay, music. I've been, let me pull up the past few albums. So I've been listening to Wale, The Gifted,
Purple Rain. You went back.
Yeah, Rain, Prince. You know, because When I write my scripts, mm-hmm. I always like, I gotta listen to music. And mm-hmm. so I've really been like, I went back and like listened to all like Wale's discography, the album About Nothing and stuff, but then also been like listening to Prince because mm-hmm. of Stranger Things, you know, that the last episode had like a lot of needle drops. I know he's controversial. I know people don't fuck with him anymore, but I got Ye, College Dropout in my.
I thought you were going to say R. Kelly. Well, go ahead.
But like, you know, those two albums changed my life in different ways.
Which one? College Dropout and which one? What else?
And My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Okay.
Which arguably I think is his best album.
That's what a lot of people say.
Production wise, uh-huh. guest wise, just the themes in it. Like, for some reason on Ye's beats, Jay-Z does the best verses. Nicki Minaj did her fucking thing on Monster. Like, that was the big introduction to her on the mainstream state, right? Mm-hmm. And just like, even the ending, Lost in the World, I remember when he said, like, this is like the song I'm gonna close Coachella with. And then I saw the live Coachella performance, and it's one of the best live performances I've seen. Like, obviously I wasn't there, but it's just, that whole album is such a vibe, and like, mm-hmm. it just gets me in such a creative space that's what I listen to. And then also, I'm looking at my Spotify right now. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of Bad Bunny, but okay. That's like a mix. It's not like a specific album or anything like that.
Okay.
How about you, man? What do you listen to?
What am I listening to? I'm going to listen to a whole lot of shit. Let me look at my little situation. I'm an Apple Music cat. I don't really do the spot. Hold on one second.
Oh, yeah. We got the whole Spotify family plan and everything.
Oh, that's nice. That's very wholesome. That's good. That's nice. What do I have in here? I've been listening to the new Conway album.
Okay.
I listened to the Nas and Premier album that just came out.
I listened to that last week. What'd you think of it?
It's growing on me. Like I said, I think it's what I've been saying to people is, you know, it's a 50-year-old man and a 60-year-old man that put together a rap album that should have came out 20 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like, so. Yeah.
It's a lot of rambling. I thought that AZ song, what is it, My Story, Your Story?
Oh, I like that. You thought it was rambling?
No. At the end, though, remember when they're like, this feels like 2046. Yeah. It's like that for a minute and a half. You're like, guys, this song's over.
They ain't seen each other in a while. You can tell they ain't seen each other. They trying to recapture the moment. Yeah, that's old head.
Cut the fat.
Yeah, man. That's old heads kicking it. talking about, you know, it's fucked up because I remember from Sopranos, that's Tony Soprano shit. Remember when is the worst form of conversation. But I like it. I like it. It's cool. Okay. It's, I got this my shit that I go to on there. What else have I been listening to? I'll tell you this. Before I get into what, before I get into that, I want to actually follow up with the Kanye thing because I just saw somebody say Kanye's, what's my man's name? I forget my man's name. Ray, I want to say Ray Murray, but that's not him. That's my man from, I don't even know these people. That's the dude from Dungeon Family. But Ray, the other Ray that's, he's from Atlanta. He's like in the industry or whatever. Sorry. But he had this take where he was like, Kanye's catalog is better than Jay-Z's catalog. As a matter of fact, I think the line was like, what Jay-Z album is better than College Dropout? Right, and that was the joint. And listen, I'm a huge Ye fan, and Kanye fan. I'm a huge Hove fan. You know, and this is just how I feel because I remember when the College Dropout came out. Like I got it early too, like before the shit. I caught a.
Oh, you got it on bootleg.
Yeah, before bootleg, I had a connect. So I had that shit. I became damn. A bootlegger. But I had that shit and it was super different to what my man said. It was just like, I think Kanye, especially early Kanye, was just so self-aware, which is crazy to see now, right? Because it's just it's almost like it's the opposite end of it all. But like he was so self-aware and like vulnerable, and you know what I mean.
And
like
he's hungry, man. He was hungry. Oh, you ever seen that docuseries where he's like, I didn't know that Dame was playing him like that. Like he was getting played by so many people.
No. I remember that. Yeah.
And I was just like, yo, he did it, but then he went crazy.
he went left for sure. But when it first came out, like it was nothing. Like it was amazing. Like particularly College Dropout. But this is my thought. This is how I feel. Okay. I don't think that particularly, and I'll say specifically College Dropout and maybe even the first four, when those was like in the moment, they were some of my favorites. I remember going to the listening for...
Wife of Pablo?
No. That was the joint at MSG. No, I went to the listening for the one, what's the joint with Good Life on there?
Graduation.
I remember going to the joint. It was like at a fucking movie theater. It's at this movie theater over by Def Jam, and they had like popcorn. Like it was an event. You know what I mean? And they played a whole bunch of shit on the screen, and it was just a moment, right? It was just like, I was in the mix during the ascension of Kanye, and back to College Dropout. As dope as that album was for me, I don't think it aged as well as Jay's shit. I think Jay's albums, to me, I think they age better than Ye's albums. That's just me. Like some of that shit, and I think maybe it has a lot to do with,
where you're at in life too.
Obviously there's that. There's definitely that. Cause if that College Dropout thing lined up with you being in college, then it's definitely one of those things. But I also think that Kanye being the producer, like as groundbreaking as some of that, those productions were, I think that when you listen back to it, it's just of a time. You know what I mean? There's certain albums that are a little bit more evergreen, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted. I think that stands the test of time. But like when I go back to like College Dropout, as dope as it is, it sounds a little dated. It sounds like of that era. You know what I mean? Just to me.
I hear that. Like the skits definitely don't hit as, you know, like they used to.
Some of the songs. What's the joint with Luda? Breathe in. What's that? You know, certain records where it's just like, okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I think certain albums, like if you look at Reasonable Doubt, I feel like Reasonable Doubt just gets better and better and better. Blueprint, to me.
Blueprint,
Yeah. Blueprint could go either way, but I do feel like, again, speaking of when it happened or whatever, I remember that shit dropping on 9/11 and it was a moment, yeah. But it's just also like, it could go either way, because that is definitely a time capsule too, with the soul samples and shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's because that was Kanye and Just Blaze doing that. Pink, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and then you got the Black Album. The Black Album is fantastic. That's like,
it is,
man.
He should have stopped there. He should have stopped there.
Well, now, because, see, I'm one of these people, and I don't know where you stand, but I'm one of these people. I think 444 was a good album.
A good album, but it's tight. That's why. Because, like, you know, Magnum Carter is so long. Yeah. Blueprint 2 is ridiculously long. What was the one, the joint with the dude from Coldplay? Show Me What You Got. What's that?
You talking about Kingdom Come.
Kingdom Come, yeah. That was a long album, too, like, for no reason.
Was it? I don't think it was that long. Kingdom Come wasn't. That was his Back From Retirement album, and it just, it kind of, I think in retrospect, that joint is,
It's only like 15 minutes.
But I think there's some joints on there, actually. There's some shit on that Kingdom Come album. There's certain, like you said, what's the joint? Like Blueprint 3, I don't really, what's the Magna Carta? I kind of act like I don't remember, you know.
Blueprint 3 is wild because that's like the first song like that he featured J. Cole on.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I didn't realize that J. Cole was Jermaine, who I went to college with.
Oh, wow. That's you crazy. Know what I mean?
Yeah. It was just like, who's this J. Cole dude? And that's then I remember my friend's like, yo, that's Jermaine from Mariah. I was like, what the fuck?
That is wild. Did y'all know each other?
Yeah, because he used to be a student leader on campus. So he was the president of this black student group called Haraya.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember freshman year, I used to tease him because I was like, yo, you look like a bootleg Chris Brown. And he would just chuckle or whatever, but he clearly won that battle.
Yeah, you know a little bit. Now he look like a bootleg Bob Marley. No, fine. But yeah, man, salute to that, man. Yeah, I was going to ask you. But back to music. So yeah, there's that conversation. I mean, where do you stand on that, first of all, if you had to compare the catalogs?
Well, I think, obviously, I think Jay has, what, maybe 3 or 4 more albums than Kanye, right?
Something like that, probably.
Yeah. For me, like, Jay-Z's stuff is, I can really listen to it, especially, like, the Blueprint. Blueprint 2 has actually grown on me quite a bit, I would say. Reasonable Doubt is fantastic. But I think with Ye, especially the run he had with like College Dropout, Late Registration, Graduation, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and 808s and Heartbreak, those just came at such at various pivotal moments in my life that, it's, for me, it's nostalgia. So I have to admit that. But also, I do think that he's so personal on those albums compared to Jay-Z, who always kind of keeps you at arm's length, that they mean more to me. If that makes sense. What I mean? Even the features that Ye gets on his albums are deeper than a lot of stuff that is put on Jay's album. Now, having said that, I will admit that College Dropout came to me at a time in high school when I was like in a very dark place because of like family stuff that was happening. I never really felt like I fit in Ann Arbor. What I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so hearing this rapper talking about, I'm not a gang member. I don't fucking flaunt around money because I don't really have it. Just trying to do his best to get through life.
Mm-hmm.
It resonated with me so much, bro. I remember my boy Baron put that fucking CD in his Cadillac CTS car. He's like, Brandon, I think you're going to love this album. And from minute one, I was hooked, man.
Mm.
Like, even the album, like, you remember CDs? Remember CDs?
Yeah.
They had the fucking teddy bear on the cover and shit. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yo, this is so dope. Like, my freshman year, I had, like, a Kanye teddy bear shirt that I wore all the time. I love that album. You can take that shit away from me, man.
That's what it is. It's always something with somebody prescribe an album to you. He's like, yo, look, I think this is going to help. It's going to save your life.
Was kind of like that. He was like, yo, I think this is going to really, help you out. And I was like, yo, thank you. Like, I thank him all the time for that.
That's deep. I think Kanye, his run really didn't start to slow down till right after Life of Pablo. I still fuck with Ye. Kid C. Ghost got some records on there. I never really got into Jesus's Kid. After a while, it just started. The last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's when it started to get a little wonky. And it was only because, for me, because he was bulletproof for a long time musically. And the thing with Ye was like, he was always bugging out between albums. He would say some wild shit, whether it running on stage, you know, taking the award from Taylor Swift, or
at the Grammys, even before that, he was saying wild stuff.
You know, George Bush don't like black people. He would always do something that would be make people be like, yo, what the fuck? But then he would he would follow it up with a fire project. Yep. And then after a while, the Sonics didn't outdo the controversy. You know what I'm saying? Like, because there was plenty of time. I was, let me hear what he got. Let me hear the album. Let me hear what he's got to say musically before I condemn him. Because I'm one of these people. It's tough for me to fully condemn some of these people. Like, you know, as a rule, I feel like we throw away so many black people. You know what I mean? I mean, some, you know, be doing some bullshit, but I don't like how quickly we throw it away. And sometimes how quickly it seems like black folks have to like condemn publicly other black people. Like, I don't see that across the spectrum. I'm not doing the whole, what about white folks? I'm not even doing that. I'm talking about within.
I think with Ye, like, the issue is that, like, even from, like, you know, like, I remember thinking back at, like, the Grammys when he was nominated for legislation, right? Mm-hmm. And he didn't win Best Album. Mm-hmm. And, but he did win a Grammy that night, and I remember he was just so kind of crazy. And I remember being like, oh, this is just him being egotistical and braggadocious, right? Because, like, you know, he's been shit on for so long. Mm-hmm. But then we never noticed that back then we were seeing hints of the mental illness.
Yeah.
Right? And it just exasperated. And, you know, I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole about the Kardashians and stuff, but they do not handle having partners that struggle with mental health issues or substance abuse issues at all. Granted, that's a personal responsibility that the person who's going through that needs to handle. But like when he got with Kim, I knew that that was not going to be good for a plethora of reasons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It got a little,
it got crazy.
Yeah. It went left. It was like, oh shit. But you know, it is what it is. But okay, back to music. This is what really made me actually bring up what you're listening to, because I've been watching. I see the return of Jill Scott is going on right now. I don't know where you stand with Jill Scott. Do you fuck with Jill Scott? Are you a fan?
I do. Living my life like it's golden. Come on, bro.
There you go. Okay, that's more late era Jill Scott.
Now, do I fuck with Jill Scott Tyler Perry movie stuff? Not so much, but musically, yes.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. I kind of, based on, I'm not a big Tyler Perry fan at all. The people know, you know. But a lot of people love that role with Jill Scott in that movie. Now, I've seen that movie maybe once. But the way that people, the way that people talk about her performance in that movie makes me want to rewatch it, surprisingly, because I'm just like, I do remember watching it. I was like, yo, she's doing her thing. And it was like, there's only two, and that might be one of the two. I did enjoy when he did, the time, considering suicide when the rainbow,
For Color Girls.
For Color Girls. I thought For Color Girls was probably his best movie in my mind. He had great cast in there, whatever. It was good for a Tyler Perry movie. Yeah. I haven't watched it back, but if I had to point to one, that's one of them joints that I watched. But anyway, so Jill Scott been out. She's doing interviews, and I think she seems like she's one of these people that don't really do too many interviews. So I've been watching. I watched the $1 million worth of game interview, which was good to see her, you know, with Gillian Wallow, her being from North Philly, that seemed to be kind of fly. And then I watched the R&B Money podcast interview, and I like that R&B Money podcast a lot, because as I've gotten older, I've become more and more of an R&B head. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it's the older black man's final form, but I know, like, when I was young, you know what I mean? When I was young, I didn't really, like, R&B was cool. I got the melody of it. I knew the hook, but I really never listened to the lyrics. I never could get the lyrics. Like, I could listen to Kool G Rap. I could listen to Pharoah Monch, and I could kind of catch everything they were saying. But for whatever reason, R&B, it just was the melody of it all. I never really tuned in. So as I've gotten older and I like go back in retrospect and I'm like, I'm starting to hear what these people are saying, blah, blah, blah. And then like, you know, I love the R&B. You know, I like any podcast where people really like get into, you know, like really analyze and get into it and speak from a point of authority. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, people that have been in it, they do it, they write it, they, you know, like to hear actual creatives really talk about their craft on some real in-depth type shit. And I think that's what that podcast offers. And also, like, at the end, they always ask them, you know, who are your top five R&B singers? What are your top five songs? And it makes me revisit these things and, you know, all of that. So I say all that shit to say, you know, the fact that, you know, Jill Scott coming back, it's been a while since she dropped some shit. And I will say I like earlier Jill more than like later Jill, you know?
Okay.
So I'm just curious to hear what this album's going to be. I think her pen is one of the illest. You know, I heard the record with her and Tierra Whack when they rhyming over a Primo beat. I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? Like it's
Yeah, she's good, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what she does. But I'm always here for some Jill Scott. I mean, she's got one of the most beautiful smiles.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm looking forward to seeing the music videos. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. That's for sure.
Also, is she single still? Not that I can do anything. I'm married. I'm a married man.
I don't even know, dog. I don't know.
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, she's single. Damn,
Wikipedia is hilarious to find out your dating status. She's single still? That should sound like somebody at a Thanksgiving. So what's going on with you? You ain't with nobody. Damn, another Thanksgiving alone. Huh? I ain't with shit. I guess she's single. I feel like with her, it don't really seem like it's. I think, you know how some people like, yo, I'm single by choice. I don't really think, especially with that smile and that, you know, that you know, that little personality and all of that shit. I don't think it would be hard for her to you know what I mean, to be in a situation. You know what I'm saying? I think there's a lot of.
I got you.
Hell yeah, dog. I think this shit look crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, the fucking DMs probably look like that bottom deck of Staten Island.
Oh, yeah. It's always wild when you see like a celebrity and you click on like their profile, like you try to like message them or you react to the story and it's open. Like, you know, it's not blocked, like restricted. And you're like, oh, you just welcoming chaos into your life.
That's like Diddy's comments. That used to kill me when Diddy was going through it. Boy, he leave them comments all the way open. He was fucking.
Oh, my God.
Definitely what? Taking notes. See who had to say what. I was like, wow.
What do you think he's going to do when he gets out? Is he going to go Russell Simmons and go to Bali or some shit?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, he did the time. So there's no sense in going where you can't be extradited. After he did the time, he's going to be. Yeah. I think the motherfucker probably going to go to the studio. I think he's crazy enough to go to the studio. Trust. It wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me.
Then he's going to go on a tour with Bill Cosby. Like, what's he going to do,
man,
with that music?
Bill been low.
Remember, he tried to go on a tour, though. Remember, they sent, like, his agent or something was like, oh, we're organizing a tour for him.
Yeah.
After he, you know, those Chargers got taken out.
Right, yeah. I guess it never happened.
It never. Because people were like, what the fuck are you telling us?
Yeah, man. It's crazy. I've never been, like, the biggest. I've seen Bill live. I actually seen Bill live at the Apollo. I seen him live at the Apollo. I want to say it was the night or maybe the weekend that Richard Pryor died. And I remember when he walked up to the, you know, because he always sit down. So he walked up to his stool, and on the stool he had like a printout. I don't know if it was a printout or it looked like a printout of it said Richard Lennox Pryor, and he held it in the air, and the crowd went crazy. And then he, you know, he sat there, did his little thing for about 2 hours. He always was slow to me. I will say, and this was almost 20 years ago. He did a bit about GPS way back then, and that shit was funny. I'm not gonna lie to you, that shit was funny as hell. I was like, okay, I still remember that because I, as much as I love comedy and they are some of my favorite comedians, sometimes I'll lead a show and 2 days later I won't remember not really one bit. You know what I mean? Like from the live show. You know, even specials, they start to blur. I remember the bit, but I can't place it after, you know, there's certain bits that there's certain specials to me that like iconic, and they're one of those that I just, you know, like a favorite album type of thing. But then so many specials I've seen, and some are good, some are, you know, whatever. And I won't know where that bit came from. You know what I'm saying? But I know the bit, but I couldn't place it. I can't be like, oh, that's such and such. That was this special, you know. But
So. I saw him in Vegas years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was the same thing. I was like, man, this is really slow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were at like a work conference, and this is like the last night. It was like the last night of the conference. Mm-hmm. And so like everyone had been drinking and stuff. And like the show was like at 9 p.m. And I remember being like, I don't know if I can stay up for this.
Wow.
You know what I mean? My boy was sleeping. Dang. The dude I went with, he was sleeping. Because it's two, like you said, it's 2 hours of him talking on the seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's comfortable with it. He's cozy. He get cozy on there. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so that's that. Yeah, I'm curious that I'm excited about this Jill Scott situation. I think it's gonna be a good one. So you got it. You said I'm looking at some of the things you wanted to talk about. You said dealing with crazy people who don't know they're crazy. Speaking of yay. And I don't want to say that, but speak more to that. What are you talking about?
I brought that up because we're the wife and I were dealing with some people in our lives that are just out of their minds, but they don't know that they're out of their minds. Mm. And this is something that I've worked with, you know, my therapist on, mm-hmm. who was basically like, you can't help a crazy person not be crazy. Like, right. You know what I mean? They have to understand that. They have to do the work to make themselves able to be successful in society. But the issue is, like, when crazy people do things that impact your life, that's when it's really, like, it's hard to handle, you know? And that's one of the things I'm going into this new year, which is, like, I'm just going to control what I can control. I can't control the people. I can't control their actions. But because I have a lot of anxiety, which I've took a long time for me to accept that that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It is hard to deal with like people that are insane who don't admit to like what, you know, you talk about, you know, parasites are the cause for all illnesses and they come through your butthole and all these things. Like mm-hmm. that's not helping you keep your kids. That might end up with me. You know what I mean? You know, it's a lot. So that's why I brought that up. But also we live in New York City where we're just surrounded by like unwell people who don't know that they're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. It keeps it entertaining. It keeps it entertaining. You gotta, I don't know. It's one of those things. I think just you learn how to navigate. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, okay, they just crazy. They ain't violent. They ain't bugging. They bugging. Yeah. They crazy. And sometimes a crazy motherfucker say something that's like poignant. Or you like, wow, okay. I've been having this thing where I guess. Cause I've had this thing, this observation where I'm in the streets and I don't know if somebody's crazy or if they just got AirPods. You know what I mean? Like they talking to themselves like crazy. Like matter of fact, I was on the train and this cat, cause some people they seem to be able to get cell phone service underground, but I know your shit ain't cracking all the way, you know what I mean? All the way through the tunnel. There was this dude that was on the train and he was having like the most spirited conversation. And it took me a minute because it was like, it sounded coherent, you know what I mean? And like I said, like it sounded like it was informed, it was intense. It didn't sound it didn't sound crazy. And I'm looking. I'm like, does he have AirPods in? Because I'm like, is he on? Where
is he talking to?
Yeah. Is he talking? Is he where? Then it was like, yo, shit, where is the phone? I didn't even see the phone. This motherfucker was on a phone call with no phone for the whole ride. I was like, wow. It was crazy. There's crazy to where you could dismiss it as crazy. There is sometimes crazy where it's impressive. You like this nigga? He's something else. But man, hopefully your man with the or your person with the parasite paranoia, you know what I mean? Hopefully they don't lose their family to that. You know what I'm saying?
I'm hoping, bro. Yeah.
That's the worst. Shit, man. Anything else I wanted to talk to you about? You know what? Before we get out of here, do you have any predictions for Oscar season? I know you, you know, medium popcorn. I know you heavy into movies and things of that nature. What do you have any predictions you want to make? And then let me ask you this before that. What were the three movies? What were your three favorite movies from 2025?
From 2025, yeah. So that'd be one of Sinners, two, One Battle After Another, and then three, I would say Knives Out 3, Wake Up Dead Man, but I think if I'm being honest with myself.
Be honest with all of us, please.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I think I'm gonna put, I'm gonna keep Knives Out 3 because I've been watching it so many times for specific scenes.
Okay.
And things because I love murder mysteries. Okay. But I've also been watching this movie called Train Dreams on Netflix.
Yeah, I've been hearing good things. I gotta check it out.
It's by the same writer that did Sing Sing, you know, the Coleman Domingo movie that came out last year. Beautiful movie, bro. And just like Sing Sing, it's a beautiful film. And it's a quiet movie about this guy who, like, he just cuts wood to make train tracks. And it's just like, it's almost like Forrest Gump in a way, where you're just watching this guy go through, like, tragic moments, heartbreak, just trying to get through the day. But then there's also, like, some really sweet, genuine moments, and there's, like, funny moments. I just love like that kind of storytelling. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sinners is number one for me. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I think that's going to go to One Battle After Another. But I do think Ryan Coogler is going to win for Best Original Screenplay. Mm-hmm. And I think Timothy Chalamet might win for Marty Supreme, Best Actor, man. I think that kid, I saw the movie and I was like, yo, I can't deny this kid is fucking good.
That's what I heard. I haven't really seen it yet. I haven't seen it yet. You know, to this day, I have not seen anything with Timothy Chalamet in it. As big as he is.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I don't know. It is almost quietly.
You haven't seen any of the Dune movies or nothing?
No. Almost quietly, there's a part of me that just kind of wants to keep it that way. Just to hold strong. But I'm going to watch Marty Supreme because I've heard good things about it. And I like the kid. I watched some of his interviews. I fuck with his interviews. I like his little impassioned, accepted speeches. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like the fact that he is competitive and like really intense about this acting shit, kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
He went to LaGuardia. He went to the fame school. He loves this shit.
Wants it forever. Yeah. But, you know, because sometimes actors could be very, you know, fake, deferential and humble. He's about to work. You know what I'm saying? He like, nah, yeah. Fam, I'm trying to be great. I was inspired by Kobe. You know what I mean? I'm like, I like that. I will see something soon. I want to see Marty Supreme. I mean, this Marty Supreme fucking, this rollout was kind of crazy. I mean, it didn't do shit at the box office, but, you know,
it's doing okay, actually. It might be A24's highest grossing movie, man.
Is it?
Yeah, it's almost at 100 mil. It's doing pretty well. And okay. I've seen it twice. I don't know how you make fucking Ping Pong exciting, but they did it.
Right.
And you know what the wildest thing about
don't spoil nothing.
I'm not going to spoil anything, but the wildest thing is, do you ever watch Shark Tank?
Yeah.
Mr. Wonderful is in it, and he's fucking great.
Okay, all right, say no
more. He plays a rich piece of shit, but like he is so ridiculously good in his role. Uh-huh. It's like baffling.
Okay, all right. I'm going to check it out. I'm with you on One Battle After Another and Sinners. I haven't watched either one of them over, but if I had to, and just from my first viewing of both, I would put One Battle over Sinners. As far as a movie goes, I think that Sinners was a better event. I went during the day. I talked about it on here. I went during the day to the IMAX shit. Like, it was amazing. It was a moment. But I think I just enjoy One Battle After Another just as a full movie.
Okay. Fair.
And then I don't know what would come in third. I seen a lot of movies last year, but not a lot of new movies. I talked about... F1, I liked. I thought that was just a fun popcorn movie.
Yeah.
Weapons was cool.
Weapons is dope.
Yeah. It was cool. I liked, I'm trying to look and see what else I seen that came out this year. I just watched.
You see K-Pop Demon Hunters?
No, I didn't see that. Is it good? Is it worth watching?
It's good, man. Okay. The songs are banging, man.
Yeah,
sounds are great.
Okay, all right. I watched, I'm trying to think, I just watched, I watched The Smashing Machine. It was okay. It was okay. It wasn't. It was. It, I had high hopes for that.
Yeah.
High hopes for that. I was really hoping that it was going to be something transformative for The Rock. I thought it was cool, but I just it was whatever. I just watched. I watched Hedda, surprisingly, because that.
Yeah, it's a good movie. That's good. Tessa Thompson, man.
Yeah, she
Jesus Christ,
she killed it. You could tell she was having fun with that role too. Like she was into it.
Yeah, I made her laugh during, when I interviewed her one time. And I was like, you know, I could die a happy man now.
There you go. There you go. Shit. Yeah, I'm trying to think what could be in third. Maybe I might I don't know. I guess it might be F1 for me. I think it might be F1 for me because it was fun. It was fun. I enjoyed that shit. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It would be dope. I would really like to see screenplay is dope, but it, I would really like to see Coogler win director. I think they're gonna go ahead and give it to
Paul Thomas Anderson. Yeah. He's gonna win, but I agree with you. I think Ryan Coogler will be our first black director to ever win an Oscar for that
Isn't
role.
That crazy.
I think he's gonna be the one, dude. His run, bro. He hasn't missed.
Yeah.
Not that I ever want him to, but like he started off in Fruitvale Station, did Creed, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, under the craziest circumstances. And actually the movie, I can't rewatch it because it's so fucking heavy and so hard to watch because of the passing of Chadwick and, you know, what happens in the plot. But then he follows it up with Sinners, his first original. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, no, he's a beast. He's a beast.
And Black Panther 3 gonna have Denzel.
He makes event films. He makes event films. I really like that. He makes, like, you know, reminds me of, like, Spielberg in that way. Like popcorn ass movies. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So,
it and you know, Denzel's gonna be in 3, right?
Yeah, Black Panther 3. That's what's up to see.
That's crazy.
Nigga. Yeah, that's gonna be interesting.
They got Denzel the Marvel movie, bro.
Yeah, I'm
you know, crazy.
I'm
that's gonna be.
Yeah, it's gonna be something. It's gonna be something. You know what's so funny? And I looked at it on the list. I seen highest to lowest, and I feel like highest to lowest got more hate than it deserved. You know what I'm saying? Listen, it's just me. Just in my mind. Go ahead.
Damien, I went to a screening, right?
Uh-huh.
Beautiful screen. It's the premiere of the movie. Uh-huh. Denzel's there. Spike's there. Questlove's there. Dapper Dan, who actually got the meat, was there.
Okay.
Right? The movie started off with really high energy. People were fucking with it. By the time the credits rolled, bro, it was muted in that motherfucker.
Ooh.
Like, people were cool, but it wasn't like... I've been to screenings for like... Some of the worst dog shit movies get like at least some applause and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was a smattering, and then everyone just started falling out.
I think, first of all, I think that one, that PR parade joint with Eddie Palmieri, like I thought that was like the high point of the movie. That was Spike in his bag. I think, and I seen High and Low. Right, I watched the Kurosawa film. So,
you watched the original one? Okay,
yeah, I watched it. I had seen it prior to Highest to Lowest even coming out. Like I had seen it before, and I was like, "Oh, they remaking it or reimagining it," as Spike called it. But what kind of killed it for me was, I felt like that first half of the movie, he was so kind of in lockstep with the original's pacing and format. That it wasn't Spike being Spike. It was Spike doing a cover. Like I said, like when it got to the PR parade joint, that's when it started to turn into a fucking Spike Lee movie. That's when it started, it was like New York. That's when it's like diversity. That's when it's like, you know, like.
A lot of fuck Boston.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Spike has always been heavy handed. You know what I'm saying? Yes, but like all of that, like that part right there, that 10 minutes was phenomenal. You know what I'm saying? I think the front end, like I said, it was a little, and then the back, like I didn't like ASAP and Denzel with the little.
I thought that was fine, like the whole studio scene and stuff, but it didn't make any sense. Like the whole ASAP Rocky's character, right? It's seemingly like obviously they fumbled the bag with kidnapping the wrong kid, right? But it seemed like he had a good plan, and then randomly he's just at home. Like he didn't get out of fucking New York.
Yeah, that
like he
was got silly.
The money.
That was silly.
He's just in the studio rapping by him. I'm like, what is going on? Like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah, that was.
It made no sense
for him to be so savvy to pull all of that shit off. You didn't flee the scene. You just at the regular ass round the way studio. You know what I'm saying? Your lady don't know. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to Princess Nokia. She don't know nothing. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I think he up at the spot. Da-da-da-da-da. Like, that shit was, that was whatever. And I just didn't like that little, you know, we talking and I'm trying to, I'm now. And then I also, it definitely was like this this commentary. I felt like, it felt a little removed. Again, back to like, not to the same degree, but I remember when this first came, it's interesting to see some of your heroes age.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like Spike Lee movies used to always feel very urgent and like of the moment, like he had a handle on what was going on outside and knew how to kind of capture it in a way that just, it was like, you know, it was a moment. It was an event similar to how Coogler, but just different in the way that it was like, to me, it felt very like he pushed culture. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and Denzel is like the Jordan, you know what I'm saying, of black actors. You know what I'm saying? So like, and to see them both like older now, and I felt like some of the support cast wasn't, outside of Jeffrey Wright, wasn't really on the same level.
Yeah, I didn't like the kids. I didn't like the guys that had to play the sons. I didn't like them. I didn't like the young singer at the end. I thought Ice Spice was distracting. I'm like, what's going on here, man?
Yeah, I didn't like the wife. And I like her on Godfather Harlem, but I just didn't like that one note when they were like, yo, your son has been kidnapped. She was like, oh. What? That's your son. He might never come back. And you hit him with a aw. I was like, yo, what the fuck is going on? That was crazy. So that's hilarious. It didn't make the top three, but honorable mention of 10 minutes. So yeah, man. It's good having you on the pod, brother.
Thanks for having me, bro. I appreciate you, man.
No doubt. What was I gonna say? Yeah, let the people know one more time. Tell them about the Drunk Black History Tour. Tell them more.
Yeah, Drunk Black History is going on tour around the country. We're going to be in Philly, L.A., all across New York, Austin, and a bunch of other cities to come and be announced. You can follow us on Instagram at Official Drunk Black History on Instagram. You can follow me at Frodo_Blackins on Instagram as well. That's where I'm at most days. Or you can get all the information at drunkblackhistory.com. Really appreciate you having me on, bro.
No doubt, man. I'm glad you came through. You know what I mean? Former high school sex ed teacher.
I got to do something with that story.
Yeah, you got to. Yeah.
Imagine trying to talk to like about abstinence in front of the chick you're trying to fuck in high school.
Yeah.
You talking about the benefits of not having sex in front of the chick you try to have sex with.
Right. That was some other shit. That was for them. But for us, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, listen.
Listen, Katie.
Right, man.
Let me tell you what's really happening.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, y'all, listen, always a pleasure to have y'all listening. I appreciate the ears. And as always, tell a friend to tell a friend, even an enemy, to get in the conversation. Hello.